Small Town Podcast is made possible by generous support from the Georgia Municipal Association. GMA supports Georgia cities.
I hereby call this episode to order.
Hey, small towners, it's Mayor Matt Seal, and this is episode 4 of Small Town Podcast. Today we travel a little north of Osceola to a small town with a strong history of GMA leadership, but it might be better known for its legendary barbecue festival. We're going to talk with Mayor Pro Tem Beth English in the small town of Vianna, Georgia. Come go with me. Growing up in coastal Georgia, I only thought I lived in a small town. Soon as I graduated high school, I moved to the big city of Atlanta for college and to start my life. My life is a journey, and I ended up in Osceola, Georgia. Population 3,400. We've got 2 traffic lights here. We're not looking to get a third anytime soon. Some years later, the people of Osceola made me their mayor. Man, I love living in a small town. Other folks do too. This is the Small Town Podcast, and I'm your host, Mayor Matt Seal of the great city of Osceola, Georgia. All right, we're off to the great small town of Vianna, Georgia. It's spelled like Vienna, and I should have played my GPS when it pronounced it that way, but that is often mistaken as the capital of the country of Austria. I think we're going to talk about that a little bit with Beth English. From Osceola, we go Highway 32 all the way to Interstate 75 North and go up a little ways. Vianna's about a little less than an hour drive from Osceola. We get off on the exit for Highway 215. Takes us straight into town. Looking forward to a nice drive and a nice visit in the city of Vianna. Coming through a nice downtown. There's a courthouse right there, and here we are at Vianna City Hall. All right, I am thrilled to have with me now the Mayor Pro Tem of the city of Vianna, Councilmember Beth English. Councilmember English, thank you so much for joining us on Small Town Podcast.
Mr. Mayor, thank you for coming to Vianna and welcome.
Thank you so much. Well, we'll jump right into this. I know you. We've gotten to know each other a little bit over the last couple of years through GMA and events and the Legislative Policy Council, but I don't know this. Were you born in Vianna?
No.
No.
Frightening thought, I'm actually a native Floridian.
Okay.
Well, where, but not for long.
Where in Florida were you born?
I was actually born in Jacksonville when Daddy came back from World War II. We spent a couple of years in Gainesville while he finished his degree under the VA benefit. And then in 1958, he was offered the first administrator position at the USDA Experiment Station in Tifton.
Okay.
And so we moved there at the end of December in 1969, and I really grew up in Tifton. So I always say I'm from Tifton, even though I'm actually, especially in the South, you are from where you were born.
That's right. That's right. Okay. Well, let's see. I guess let me ask this then. So you grew up in Tifton. Is that where you graduated high school?
I did. Yes. Okay. Tift County High School cheerleader.
Oh, I can imagine.
Yes.
Yeah.
Went on to cheer for other things.
You
like
didn't stop
cities.
Being a cheerleader either.
No.
And so what did you do after college?
Well,
after high school.
I went to ABAC for 2 years.
Okay.
And
right there in Tifton.
Loved it. Some of my best friends today are folks I met at ABAC. It was about 4 miles from my house, and so Mother and Daddy wanted me to at least feel like I was going to college, so I got to stay in the dorm the first quarter. It was back then, it was quarters. And I had the back room on the first floor. And it was back when you had curfews. And if I had a dollar for every girl that snuck out my back window, I would have been a very wealthy lady.
Well, you should have charged the toll. That would have been good.
I know. But I was at ABAC, loved it there. And
so you say your parents wanted you to have the college experience, or was it that they wanted the college experience of not having you after you graduated high school living at home?
Well, it was just for one quarter, so they didn't get that much of an experience. It was a lot of fun, though, and I met people from all over Georgia and got to be friends with people from Bainbridge and Attapulgus and Moultrie and places that, you know, I would never have met. And finished up my degree at Valdosta State and stayed there and finished my master's and in clinical psychology and counseling, and that's actually how I ended up meeting my husband. So
they're in Valdosta?
No, not in Valdosta. I went to work at the mental health center in Tifton in the child and adolescent mental health program. And a friend of mine said, you really need to meet the new court service worker in the juvenile court. He's single. And so we talked on the phone about some mutual cases. He had some kids who needed some counseling. I guess we started talking in December and ended up meeting at the sheriff's office in Ben Hill County in March of 1977. And according to what he has told the legend he's created anyway, he told
his
the sheriff
version.
That was the girl he was going to marry. He was going to marry me. First time he ever met me now. I don't know. But anyway.
It turned out he was right. So
He was.
Good for him.
We had our first date in May, got engaged in June, and got married in December, and I moved to Vienna.
Well, he convinced you really quick. So he was from Vienna.
No, he wasn't.
I keep getting the story wrong.
He was from Plains, but he had moved to Vienna to be an assistant in the recreation department. His degree was in PE rec. But the thing that was so funny about Steve is that he carried Vienna brochures everywhere he went. And when I first met him, he handed me a Vienna, Georgia brochure. Never in my worldly, you know, would never have thought that would have been the beginning of my 40 years now here in Vienna.
So that was part of the courting process.
Apparently
you needed to make sure.
Yes.
So he was a cheerleader for Vienna before you
he
were.
He loved Vienna. Yeah.
Well, that's really neat. So, So short courtship, married, moved to Vienna, and continued to do the clinical psychology work at some of the different
I did
places.
For a while, but really most of my career, starting in really 1978, right after we were married, was in the developmental disabilities arena. And I worked for what's now Middle Flint Behavioral Health until I left there in 1992. So all of my career has been spent in disabilities, but right around this general area.
Yeah, and the entire time since then, living in Vienna.
Always living in Vienna.
The center of your universe.
It is. Wonderful place to live. My mother said, what in the world are you doing moving to such a small town? Like Tifton is something huge. I mean, it was much smaller then than it is now.
It's a great town, but it's
so much bigger.
Mayor Julie Smith, I tell her all the time, she lives in a metropolis compared to Ocilla or Vienna.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. We're trying to create the Tifton rural metropolitan area. We'll see how that goes.
Well, you know, Vienna, the thing that I love so much about it when I moved here is that people were so welcoming. There wasn't any kind of cliquey kind of atmosphere here. And, you know, we were just embraced in our church and in the community. And we both of us got really involved in just community activities, which is, I guess, in the long run, what led eventually to me running for city council.
Well, let's talk about that now. What year did you get married and move to Vienna?
In December of 1977.
Okay, December of 77. And when did you first run for city council?
Not until 1997.
Okay.
I was really active in my women's club. I was, at some point, was very active in the Chamber of Commerce and actually served as the second woman president of our chamber, was one of the founders of the Vienna Historic Preservation Society. And that actually happened because we had absentee landlords. We had beautiful, beautiful historic homes that were falling into rack and ruin. And so a group of us got together and established a society and really tried to bring awareness to the community. In fact, our former city manager, Stanley Gambrell, who is known and loved by many, called us a hysterical society.
Okay.
Which is fine. We did not mind
so
whatever you called
us. Pronounce historical a little different. And you don't seem to be arguing that may have fit.
No, but you know, it's one of the beauties of the community is that we have been able to preserve a lot of not only our historic residential area, but our historic downtown. The courthouse square, most of the blocks around the immediate downtown are still intact. And our spec building actually is probably one of a kind. It's a historic spec building. We were able to use all the old brick to do the facade. The actual building itself, you know, is new, but the facade is the original old brick. So, yeah, so that basically when Ms. Sarah Ambrose was the only woman on city council and she decided to retire, and Ms. Sarah was, I don't know, she may have even been 80. She was older, but she was very vivacious and very gregarious and very, very beloved in the community. Several men in the community asked me if I would consider running for city council. And I said, well, why would you ask me? And they said, well, you're so active in the community and we know you, we know how you think about things, and we feel like you would be a good representative for the city. And so I ran unopposed, and I have run 5 times unopposed. Okay. I have enjoyed every single moment of it.
Well, that speaks very well of your popularity if nobody wants to even try to unseat you.
Oh, goodness. I hope it reflects decision-making abilities that people find sound.
Well, now you've gotten involved. I mean, it sounds like you were very involved before you got with the council. And I know just from my short time with the Georgia Municipal Association, you've gotten very involved there. Also, like the current mayor, Hobby Stripling, you are a former GMA president, all the way up to the top of the heap there. But also, what are some of the other things you've done? I know you and I serve on the Legislative Policy Council together, but what else have you done with GMA over the years? And just speak a little bit about that experience.
Well, my first, I guess, month that I was on the council, Stan Gambrell told me, says, you need to be active. And my mayor at the time, Willie Davis, was president of GMA.
Okay.
So I didn't know that you always went to everything, every district meeting, every state meeting. You just went.
That's
because
just the
your
way it
mayor
was.
Went
okay.
And you went. And so I started participating very, very early on and loved the training, loved the networking. You know, I found out really quickly that no city has a problem that some other city hasn't experienced, and you can get some great advice. And it may not be exactly your situation, but you got lots of good information from not just
start.
The content.
That's
but,
right.
Yeah, from the people. I was one of the first people appointed to the LPC, the Legislative Policy Council, and one of maybe 2 or 3 that have continued that entire time. I've always enjoyed that. Back in my real job, disability issues have always been something of concern at the state legislature and to some degree in Congress. And so I had gotten very involved in lobbying and in advocacy in the early 80s. And, you know, it just brought a lot of interest to the issues cities were facing. And the one thing I think I learned really quickly as a member of the city council was that I don't know that the general public, even very educated, involved people, realize how complicated and complex city government is and how many regulations
yeah.
that we have to look at and how many different bodies oversee and review and audit. And it's just it's so much more complex than you have 2 meetings a month and boom, you're done.
Right.
You know, it's just different. But that's how I kind of got my start. I just showed up every time and I had a real interest in environment and natural resources. And was honored to serve as the chairman of that policy committee for the 2 years. Went to a lot of the water hearings at the state capitol. Ended up, as a result of that, being appointed to actually chair a subcommittee that GMA put together on water. And it was a great committee. There were people from all over the state, and we really heard a lot of good information from just a variety of sources on the whole water issue, which happened right about the same time all the water wars started picking up. So I've been able to be active in the Upper Flint Water Policy Council as a result. Funny story, I was the only woman the first go-round, and then the second time the governor appointed another woman, and her name was Beth also.
So, so 2 Beths.
Yeah, they didn't have any trouble remembering our names at all. So just that and being really involved in GMA, I was very, very honored when I was elected to be the 3rd vice president and was able to move up and be the president of GMA. I was awarded so many opportunities going to the National League of Cities and meeting with mayors all over the state and being invited to be parts of activities within the different cities in Georgia. It was a wonderful, wonderful experience. I made friends that whole time and continue to do so now that I feel like are lifetime friends. They're almost like family to me. I've served on our GMEBS, which is our Georgia Municipal Association Employee Benefits Board, since I think 2004. And, of course, we manage, you know, life, health, retirement. And, again, that experience has really given me an incredible appreciation for the work of cities, but also for the services that our municipal association provides. We're one of two states in the country that have the comprehensive kinds of employee benefits that we offer. And we're able to do so much because we own those companies. The cities own those companies. And there are no shareholders to pay dividends. The members reap the rewards in safety grants and reduced health insurance premiums. There's just so many things that we're able to do because it's a member-owned corporation that, you know, we can just help support our cities, and particularly the small cities that won't have the power or the buying power.
Right.
You know, that some of the larger cities have.
Because, you know, like you know, I became mayor in late 2015 without any previous council experience and immediately felt like I just did a cannonball off the high dive into the deep end of the pool and trying to figure out those layers of complexity you speak of. I felt firsthand and still continue to feel. But, and I don't want to turn this too much into a GMA commercial, although thank you for their sponsorship. But yeah, the services, and I was glad that Osceola was already taking part in several of them. I don't know how some cities would do it without, you know, having those kind of services offered the way they're offered. It is just amazing. So
there's power in the numbers.
Oh, absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
And for small cities, it's a godsend because you can't compete.
Well, and that was my next thing. And first of all, to point out, you've had three past GMA presidents, all from Vienna.
We have.
And your population is right around 4,000 now. So that's pretty remarkable to have that kind of participation from a small town. So go small town. As far as, you know, and there's a lot going on with the House Rural Development Council. Georgia Chamber has had a Rural Prosperity Summit, and they've formed some committees to help with some recommendations for rural development. From your statewide experience and your regional experience to right here in Vienna, what are some of the things that you see your small town struggling with? Maybe that all rural areas are struggling with in Georgia and really America, but also maybe the specific to Vienna. What are you guys struggling with, and how are you dealing with some of those things?
I think one of the things that we've seen and we continue to see is our brightest and smartest and best, most talented young people are leaving and they're not coming back because we don't have the economic opportunities to keep them here. I think that's an issue. I think another, even with broadband, even with the electronic capacity that we have, as adequate or inadequate as it is in rural Georgia, we just need to be able to attract the kind of jobs that bring people and keep people in small towns. Housing for us is an issue. We have some wonderful old historic homes, but if you can't afford to buy and upkeep one of those, there's very limited housing. And Mayor Stripling, our current mayor, has really had a focus on developing housing for working families. Mm-hmm. So that, and I don't think that's uncharacteristic of rural Georgia at all. Education can be a struggle. Our system here was one that the governor appointed the Board of Education last year. We had two newly elected board members who, because they were new, were allowed to serve. And I thought that was great because both of those people, they're younger, are products of the Dooley County school system, and they've both done very well. And so I think having that and having that school system begin to turn around, seeing improvement is going to be a plus for that. You know, I've read some of those reports. Healthcare, you know, shows up in so many places. Vienna is actually, Dooley County is actually in kind of a different position. We had a researcher from Georgia State University come a couple of years ago and meet with council and do some meetings across the community because we had better numbers. We were one of the few places in the United States that had better numbers given the demographics and the geographics and all the things. But if you look at where we're located, we're right on I-75. We're 10 minutes from the hospital in Cordele. We're 30 minutes from the hospital in Americus. We're 30 minutes from the hospital in Hawkinsville. We're 30 minutes from the hospital in Perry. We're an hour to Tifton, an hour to Albany, an hour to Macon. And we have transit. So, you know, there's a lot of things because of our geographic location. Even though we lost our hospital a long time ago, we have the ability to access good health care. And the transportation is a huge piece because every time we've had any sort of needs assessment survey in any group I've been a part of, whether it be disability community, whether it be city, county government, or anything else, transportation in rural Georgia is a huge, huge piece of the puzzle that's got to be solved.
And I know we'll continue to talk about and looking forward to see what some of the proposed solutions are and continue to be for rural broadband and healthcare and transportation and just economic development in general. Beth English, this is the Get to Know You questions. Do you have or have you ever had a nickname?
Well, Beth is my nickname. My full name is Ruth Elizabeth, and they called me that for the first 2 years of my life until my grandmother, thank God, read a book, and the heroine's name was Beth, and so I became Beth.
Fantastic. So Beth is the nickname.
It okay. is the nickname.
If you had to sing a one song karaoke for the honor or the reputation of your fair city of Vienna, what would that karaoke song be?
Well, since I can't sing, I would probably have to lip sync it, but it would be Johnny Mathis's Unforgettable.
Oh, that's beautiful.
What you are.
There you go. Beautiful, beautiful. How about a favorite meal or dish?
Oh, I love food. I am a serious foodie. I mean, I live for the next restaurant. Oh, I love a good lobster bisque. I really like ceviche. I like Italian food. I can't tell. I don't have
Can't narrow it down to one.
I love all food.
All right. Well, that's not the rules. All right. Final question. If you could attend the concert of any singer or group, whether they are dead or alive, what concert would you want to go see?
You know what? This is going to sound really silly, but I always loved her growing up, and I would just say Doris Day.
All right. Well, there you go.
Hey, small towners. I want to pause our conversation with Beth English for just a moment to talk about something very near and dear to her heart. Beth English works for Easter Seals Southern Georgia. Eastern Seals is an incredible organization helping people with disabilities. To explain what they do, I can't say it any better than their own mission statement. So let me read that to you right now. Our mission is to spread help, hope, and answers. Easter Seals provides exceptional services, education, outreach, and advocacy so that people living with autism and other disabilities can live, learn, work, and play in our communities. Easter Seals Southern Georgia provides exceptional services to ensure that all people living with disabilities or special needs and their families have equal opportunities to live, learn, work, and play in our communities. Now, if that sounds like something you would like to be a part of, go to easterseals.com/southerngeorgia. There you can see what Easter Seals does for people in South Georgia and parts of North Florida. You can also donate, and you can see how you can get involved and connect locally with the office closest to you. That's easterseals.com/southerngeorgia. Small towns are about helping those in your community live better lives. So go find out how you can do that in your community today. While I was in Vienna, I wanted to visit with a local business to get the small business owner's perspective on small town living. I was recommended to go to Western Boutique. It's a local clothing and boot store, but they have more than just Western wear. Now, if I didn't know I was in a small southern town before I walked in, I knew after I walked in by the warm greeting.
Welcome to the Western Boutique. So glad y'all came. Where y'all from?
I got a chance to sit really? Down with the owner
right.
for just
we
a bit.
Tennessee. We've had lots of folks from Tennessee.
My name is Lisa Nutt. Actually, I married a nut, so I became one. I own the Western Boutique. It's here in Vienna, Georgia. We've been here for 5 years going on, actually six. We had three locations on the same street. We actually moved from 103 to 106, which was downtown, which if you're in the area, you need to visit downtown because it's a lovely little place. We actually wanted to get out here so we could have more interstate traffic, so we rented a store out here by off the exit 109 and have more square footage and able to sell more items and give the customer more of what they're looking for.
So tell us about what it's like to do business in a small town, which can be good, but I'm sure there's some disadvantages too sometimes, and specifically about Vienna. So what do you enjoy about being in Vienna and having a business here?
Well, going back to Alan Jackson when he was singing about all the small towns are dwindling away and it's such a shame. I like to build a small town. I love the atmosphere of a small town. I hate going to malls. It's just a personal thing with me. Nothing against malls, but I just don't. I like a small town atmosphere. And we've actually had positive things going on in Vienna. The Chamber of Commerce works really hard to help us all out. We just met a lot of interesting customers. The customers are repeat customers that are local. Nice ladies from the bank. Beth English, we can name numbers of people that have been here all their life that keep coming back to shop. Donna Kiner, just on and on. And God knows we're thankful for those customers because without customers, we have no store.
And speak to that because it's different. And I know from some retail experience myself, you know, if you're in a bigger city, you may not know as many of your customers. But in a small town, those repeat customers you talk about,
Do you feel like that becomes kind of its own little community within the community, your repeat customers?
We do, and we've also built up a repeat customer from out-of-town traffic from our billboards that we have. They keep coming back, and we like to get to know our customers when we come in because we ask where they're from, how they're doing, and we welcome them in, and also they come back and say, well, we were here last year, don't you remember? And I'm going, okay, yes, we do. Thank you for coming back. So, yes, we want all customers to come back, and the small community and the locals are one of our greatest assets to our business, because without them, we'd have no store either. So we like all the customers.
Coming into the store, I didn't realize how much square footage there was. So I definitely want to give you a chance to talk about it, all the things you have. So talk about some of the most popular items and maybe something that's kind of a hidden treasure that you've got that maybe is a little more rare.
Well, we do have a lot of local people. Sonny Shankster, for example, he moved here from Alaska, retired surgeon, and he makes handmade knives. They're on consignment. He also has a website you can go to, but we have local items in here that's what made as well. Not all of our store is Western. A lot of it is casual. We do have that on the billboards, but because it's named the Western Boutique, people think it's just Western. But we do have casual as well. Most of the items that we carry are casual. We do have a lot of the Western, like Scully, Cinch, Ariat. So they're all mixed in. They're all different items. It's just a fun store to come to.
I know you already mentioned her, but Beth English is a big fan of your store. She told us about you, and it sounds like she is a very regular customer.
Most definitely. Beth is a ball of energy. She is someone that you look up to because she's just so pleasant to be around. She has brought us customers. A lot of our local customers have done so also. They all bring us more customers. Here at the Western Boutique, we have a Texan. What you do is you text 51660-WESTERN. And it actually texts us to your phone when we have sales. Like this week, for example, we've got jewelry half-price racks that are 75% off with the text message. But how you get signed up is the first original text and message that you sign up for, you get one item at 20% off. Then after that, then you'll get the discounted items will come straight to your phone.
And say what they have to do again. What does it have to text?
Text WESTERN 51660.
All right, that sounds like a pretty good deal. Small town, high technology. Well, Lisa, thanks for joining us. And everybody needs to come to Western Boutique when they come visit Vian anyway, because Beth English is talking about it so good. So thanks again for talking to us today.
Thank you as well.
Talk about some of the joys of living in a small town.
Oh, my gosh.
And obviously, you're going to have to talk about Vianna.
I will. I love Vianna. You know, it's just, again, it's the people. It's always the people. When anybody in this community has ever had a huge need or a crisis, the community comes together. It doesn't matter what your income is, what your ethnicity is, what your religious preference is. Our community has always pulled together to help people. You can just look around. We have a multi-church open hearts thrift shop out at the interstate. They don't just sell used goods. They turn all that money back in for community projects. They take care of kids at Christmas. They provide meals. I mean, there's just so many things like that. That's just one example of the way people in this community have always pulled together to care for each other. It's just, I think, a spirit. I laugh and say Vianna also has a very high tolerance for eccentricity, because we have had some characters from here. If you have a chance to take a look at the Kingdom of Dooley book, which is a product of our historic society. The Kingdom of Dooley. This was a huge county. It incorporated all of Crisp County, part of Pulaski. It's huge. Anyway, there's a whole section dedicated to notables. And, of course, we have Ruth Reiner Lowe, who went on to the Tennis Hall of Fame. We have, of course, United States Senator Walter F. George, who's responsible for vocational education. We have Roger Kingdom, an Olympic star. We have former Supreme Court Justice Hardy Gregory. We have Miss Methvin, who was the founder of the Georgia Press Association. Just so many different people. Vincent Sherman, who is a Hollywood movie director, took elocution lessons from Miss Ruth Hemperley, who lived right down the street. And he was here when we celebrated one of her birthdays. But Michael Landon's family, the Orwitz family, was also from here. So there's all sorts of connections. Jody Powell was from Dooley County. There are all sorts of connections from people that have just a variety of talents. Ulysses Marshall is a very famous African-American artist. He's from here. So, you know, you just have to be able to create all of that talent in all those kind of diverse areas. There's got to be some fertile soil. So
that's right.
Now, that's what
or
I think it is.
Or something in the water, I guess. Yeah, that's right. Tell me about, you've had so much experience in, you know, the various aspects with the Chamber and the Historical Society. What is your, I guess, your favorite thing? I know you're saying the people is what makes Vianna and the joys of a small town, but what's your favorite thing, whether it's an event or some local flavor or something about your city of Vianna?
Well, now, you cannot be from Vianna and not say you love the Big Pig Jig. Well, Georgia State Barbecue Cooking Contest that is known all over the country. So, of course, I would say that. But I think the other part of it, too, would be just the influx of people that we do have. We're getting a large number of retirees from Florida that have found this is a nicer place to be. And we actually have an international bed and breakfast. The couple is from Belgium and the Netherlands. They bought it on the internet and operate not only a bed and breakfast, but twice a month they have international dinners.
Wow.
And they speak like 9 languages. But
and how many do you speak now?
I have a little tiny bit of Russian from college, a little tiny bit of French from high school, and mostly South Georgia English. That's the extent. I can say one phrase in German that my daddy taught me. That's it. But they have really developed a following. The January dinners are going to be French. And so they'll do a different dinner, a different country every month. And people from 50 miles away come for it. I mean, it's really turned into like a destination event. I guess I say that to say they've been embraced and they've been welcomed by the community and very accepted. He's gone on to open another business here, a solar business. And so it's been not only a little economic engine from the tourism standpoint, it's been an economic sort of catalyst for a very cutting-edge business as well. Who'd have thunk it?
Yeah, so there's a lot going on. So if someone were going to come to Vianna and they could only see or participate in one thing, whether it's a significant monument or an event or a building, what would you tell them? You seem to know all the goods on Vianna. What's the one thing you have to make sure that someone went and saw or participated in?
That would really be hard to say. Last year, we had, this was one of the mayor's projects, we had a beautiful combined choir Christmas performance in the park. And it was magnificent. And we had some children also performing from the school. So I think an event like that, that pulls the community together, that just, you know, another example is our crazy Christmas trees out on the square. Different clubs put together a Christmas tree, and we had a big event that day. It's just, I think, just to see the people of the community come together and enjoy each other and to celebrate an event, whatever it is, if it's Halloween, if it's the Big Pig Jig Parade, you know, if it's the pig jig itself, if it's a church event, you know, just any of the things that bring our community together to celebrate together.
Going back to your service on the council, I imagine with all that you've been involved in with GMA, with your level of involvement inside your city, you've been a council member. You said you're in your 5th term now, run unopposed every single time. Any thoughts about running for mayor? And why have you decided not to do that so far? And let me ask this before I even ask that. How many mayors have you served under since you came on the council in 1997?
Mayor Davis was my first mayor. And then we had a mayor who was mayor for about 3 weeks. And so I know I shouldn't say that, but I really don't count that. Mm-hmm. I don't think he really understood what the mayor job was. And then I served under Mayor Lundy and Mayor Daniels and, of course, under Mayor Hobby Striplin, which I was delighted to be able to work with him, especially.
So that was, is that 5, including the 3-week?
It's 5, yeah.
Now, I can't let that go too far. But you had a mayor that only served for 3 weeks. So it was elected in a regular election, or was that a special election?
No, it was a regular election.
Regular election, and in a November election, and then took office in January?
He did.
And was gone before February?
Yes.
Without putting you too much on the spot, how did he resign after 3 weeks, or did something else happen there?
He resigned.
Okay. just decided quickly it wasn't for him?
I think that one of the things I would always encourage people to do before they run for office is read your charter and understand what the roles of each part of government have, and to really understand that, you know, to know that. Because I always used to laugh when people say, why don't you run for mayor? I said, I like my vote. Our mayor doesn't vote.
That's
unless
right.
It's
and this is a veto.
So I like my vote. I want to vote.
A tiebreak.
You know,
that's
I have
right.
never, I haven't ruled out running for mayor ever, but I just, you know, I'm happy being on the city council. I love working with my fellow council members and my mayor. In every situation, we've always had a great deal of respect for each other. We all know that we can vote differently. We can have different opinions. But at the end of the council meeting, we're all friends. We all have done what we feel like is the best thing to do. We hug and go home.
Well, that sounds like small town.
It is. That's one of the beauties. Because the other thing about being a small town elected official, as you well know, is they will catch you at church and they will catch you in the stores and they will catch you in the post
store.
Office and
yep.
they will catch you wherever you are.
The bank
which
lobby.
Is great.
Right.
I mean, yeah. accessibility is what you want.
Sure,
you don't, and,
absolutely.
You know, we do have that as an advantage over people who live in large cities who have very inaccessible people, or even if they want to be accessible, they can't be. There's too many people here. Everybody knows where you
right.
live. They know your phone number, even if it's, I keep my landline for that reason. But, you know, they know you. They know where you. They can find you. Dollar General Saturday morning, 9 o'clock, you can find Beth English.
So, and it may involve the 3-week mayor, but my next question was going to be, what is the most provocative or unusual thing that's ever happened in a council meeting or a public hearing or any of your public meetings? You've got a lot of years of experience to draw from. There's got to be something pretty provocative in there.
Probably one of the ones that was probably one of the most contentious ones was when we had a room full of people at the meeting before the mayor resigned, and there had been some appointments that had not been made that were problematic, and the council actually read our Robert's Rules of Orders really well and read our city charter real well and had to make some decisions and basically do some things to get the meeting back on track. And that had a room full of people. We had people in the hallway. We had police there because we just didn't know how things were going to go. But everything was fine and everybody, you know, behaved appropriately and everything turned out, you know, the way it needed to. We just really don't have a lot of contentious things. And the thing that we all have tried to do is to talk about them and find some common ground. And if we can't find some common ground, then, you know, we don't put it on the table.
So usually pretty laid back meetings, just getting business done here and there. But that one pretty,
yeah, that one was.
Now you said appointments. What appointments didn't get made?
Well, the city administrator appointment wasn't going to get made and
okay.
a city clerk appointment, yeah.
And so it wasn't that a different one was made, it's just one didn't get made at all, and so there's kind of some people hanging in limbo there?
That would be a nice way to put it.
Okay, all right. I won't chase that rabbit too far. All right, well, let me ask this now. So you'll have to go back to when you first became elected and first got put on the council. You probably had some things in mind, said, well, here are the important issues. And then when you get in office and people do start catching you in the store or at the post office or, you know, calling you at night, the things that are most important to them are sometimes something you never thought of before. What were one of those things? What ends up being the things you get the most calls or the most complaints about in town that you just didn't think of that you'd be dealing with as much when you first got elected?
So I guess one of the things, and then and now, that I get the most calls about or emails is fireworks. People hate them. The dogs hate them. The babies hate them. The only people that don't hate them are the people that are doing them.
They're shooting the fireworks and having the party.
That is such a huge, huge issue for us during those times of the year, but people feel like they need to shoot fireworks. You know, we have our traditional potholes like everybody else. Sidewalks are a huge issue. Our old historic part of town have sidewalks. The part of town that has grown do not, and we really need to do that. So that was certainly a topic at our last council meeting, how to make that happen using a combination of T-Splice and some other funding sources and with assistance from the county. The things that I went in when I first was elected, three of the things that I really wanted to do and I did get done and I was really excited about was there was an old historic cemetery that was on the edge of town and it was being vandalized and we got a fence put up around it so it was protected. We passed a teen curfew that was very reasonable. We had input from teens themselves and that's been in place since 98. our playgrounds. Nothing had been done on our playgrounds for years and years and years. And so we got all brand new playground equipment for three of the playgrounds here in the city. And that was great because then kids were back out using them again. And so those were things that were important to me. The historic preservation was important, and that almost got to be controversial. We wanted to establish a historic preservation commission because if you do that, then you're eligible for certain types of grant money as a certified local government that you're not if you don't have it. Well, we had, you know, the public notices and the public hearings, and we had a room full of people who were very not happy about that. And we explained to them, okay, we're not going to tell you how to paint your house. All this does is be very specific about certain exterior characteristics of your house that are historically important. And, you know, we explained it. We explained it more than one hearing. We actually had somebody almost come across the table after me at that meeting. She was so unhappy. Later, she ended up being the chairman of the Historic Preservation Commission because she totally understood it and got on board. But one of the funny things that happened after we passed that ordinance was that we had someone in town paint a beautiful old historic home of a very interesting purple. And I got phone calls all over the place. And I said, y'all, we told you, we're not going to tell you how to paint your house. We told you that at the, and, you know, so that's when a lot of the people who had been initially had not been in favor of the historic preservation ordinance got completely on board and really would have preferred a stricter one. But it's that commission is very active. Our community has been very engaged in the process. People that move into town that are new are very used to that because most other cities have that. And it's been a great help. We have something called demolition by neglect. And so if you own a historic property and you're not taking care of it, we have something that has a little bit more teeth in it that can help us from and keep us from losing some of these beautiful pieces of architecture.
So I have to ask, now I'm not an investigative journalist by any stretch of the imagination, but Beth, did you paint that historic house purple?
No.
Just to try to swing people in your favor and see things your way?
No.
All right, no, I'm just kidding.
If I'd have thought about it, maybe.
You'd have done it first. All right, so big cheerleader for Vienna. There is a European country that has a capital city that is spelled the same way, but they pronounce theirs Vienna. Do you have people come through all the time that try to say it's Vienna, but you have to correct them, it's Vienna?
All the time. And I just simply say, think about it like this. You have an Aunt Viola and an Aunt Anna, and you just put it together, and it's Vienna.
Vienna.
Very simple. We actually did, believe it or not, our little tiny city had the Vienna Austria Boys Choir here to perform.
Oh, so the people from
Vienna,
the actual capital of the European. Okay.
They did.
Okay.
They did. It was wonderful. It was part of our Better Hometown celebration that lasted an entire year. And we had people from all over Georgia that came to hear it.
Wow.
As you know, we have trains on both sides of our town.
Yes. We've had to pause a couple times during this recording.
Well, so did the Vienna Boys Choir.
Oh, no.
So, yes.
Did people try to pronounce the name of their group, the Vienna Boys Choir, when
no.
they came? To, okay. And everyone realized they were actually from Vienna.
Yeah, and it was wonderful. They're just as wonderful as
That's
you've
really
ever
neat.
Heard.
That is really neat. So
we
they
raised
came
all
the
money. Raised all the money to be able to do it.
Wow.
It was very, very cool.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's really impressive. All right, as we wrap it up, you have 30 seconds or so to give a pitch to why someone should come and visit or maybe even come and live in your beautiful town of Vienna.
If you like a slower pace with friendly people and lots to do when you want to do it and the ability to just be yourself and contribute whatever talents you have, Vienna's place for you. We have some dear friends that just moved here from a town about 40 miles away, and they laugh. They said they tell their friends their social schedule is so much more busy than it ever was in the town before. And they said, you know, people here, if there's not something going on, they make something happen.
Yeah.
And so I really think, you know, that's part of the charm is that people are warm and welcoming, and you want to you can contribute any way you can. I mean, we have a group that are very into arts. We have, you know, various musical opportunities for people. I mean, there's just a lot of things you can do.
Beth English, thanks for joining us, and you come to Osceola anytime.
I would love to come see you. Sweet Potato Festival.
That's right.
Well, small towners, that'll do it for this episode of the Small Town Podcast. I want to thank our ever-faithful sponsor, the Georgia Municipal Association, for their continued support. Thanks to Mayor Pro Tem Beth English for joining us.
And I want to thank you, our listeners, for your support of this project. I'd love to hear your feedback on this or any other episode. Maybe you know a small town with a great story that I should go visit. So leave me a comment at smalltownpodcast.com or reach out to me on Facebook or Twitter at SmallTownPcast. Talk to you soon, and y'all are welcome to come to Osceola anytime.
This episode of the Small Town Podcast was mixed and mastered by my friends at Resonate Recordings. If you're looking to increase the quality of your podcast, or if you're looking to start a podcast of your own, talk to my friends at Resonate Recordings, resonaterecordings.com.
We stand adjourned.